Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone, and thank you for tuning in to another edition of Family Matters with Kenny and Kwajalein. Today's topic is going to be a topic that's more likely going to touch home. But I ask right now that, you know, when you listen, you know, you take a moment and you just, if you have something to share, please let us know, because we want to make sure that we're able to get through to all our callers on tonight. Sexual abuse of children is unfortunately a common occurrence within the outside of the home. We often hear of cases of children being perpetrated against by family members, friends, teachers, strangers, and even online. This is often a parent's worst nightmare and is a very tragic event that can and will oftentimes cause deep underlying issues for the victims, the parents, and the family as a whole. How can we as parents prevent our children from becoming victims of sexual abuse? How can those who have already been victimized be helped? Is there a chance for true healing after such a tragedy? How can the family come together as a unit to help those who have been victimized? What help is available for the parents of children who have been victimized? What can we as a community do to stop this vicious cycle of abuse? Again, thank you again for joining Blog Talk Radio, and our episode of is about sexual abuse. And we just ask that, you know, like I said, if you have anything that you would like to share, just please feel free to let us know, so that way we can ensure that, you know, we're giving you an opportunity to speak.
I need to take it away.
Hello, everyone. Thank you for joining us on tonight. We do appreciate everyone for tuning in. And as always, we thank, you know, our faithful listeners. We thank you all for tuning in and taking time out of your Tuesday and Friday nights to join us in these conversations as we assist in trying to deal with these family issues and just make things better for families, to try to get back to a place where families used to be, and in some cases maybe even get to a better place. And so, again, you know, we just thank you all. So sexual abuse of children is what we are talking about tonight. And we know that this is a very, very sensitive subject. Like my husband said, you know, we would appreciate for everyone, you know, to chime in, to conversate with us, to share, you know, your knowledge with us, your opinions with us, and what we can do to help in this situation. First of all, I wanted to define what sexual abuse of children is. And this definition was taken from the American Psychological Association website. And at the end of the show, I will be giving out some resources, some websites, you know, just as resources for those who may be listening, who may be dealing with this, who know someone who is dealing with this, you know, who, you know, even if you just want to educate yourself, because again, as I, you know, I've said before, we need to be educated and knowledgeable on things. Sexual abuse of children is unwanted sexual activity with perpetrators using force, making threats, or taking advantage of victims who are unable to give consent. Again, unwanted sexual activity with perpetrators using force, making threats, or taking advantage of victims who are unable to give consent. And we all know that children are not at an age to give, that they are easily manipulated and taken advantage of. And so anytime a child experiences sexual abuse, that child is a victim. We have heard before, I know I've heard, where you have some cases where people are trying to say, well, she said that I could. No, children are victims. I have some statistics here from the Department of Health and Human Services. Also, I mean, although the statistics are somewhat inaccurate due to failure to report, because we do know that a lot of cases of sexual abuse, especially within the homes, they are not reported for different reasons. And we're going to go more into detail about those reasons as we go on. But in 2013, the Department of Health and Human Services reported that there were 58,105 cases of reported sexual abuse within the United States. Again, 58,105 cases that were reported in 2013. There are many forms of sexual abuse. We're going to go over some of those. Some of those are inappropriate touching, sexual kissing, fondling of private parts, genital areas, the actual intercourse, exposing genitals, or what we would consider as flashing, exploitation, inappropriate statements, and voyeurism. You know, someone watching, and we're watching when they're looking at these children, and, you know, when they're in the tub, those type things, they, you know, they're secretly taping them, you know, these type things. So these are the forms of sexual abuse that takes place against children. And we do have some callers on the line, so we're going to go ahead and start opening up the line so we can continue on with the conversation. We're going to start off with 5065. Shannon, you're on the air.
Hello. Good afternoon. Good evening.
Hi.
Can y'all hear me okay?
We can.
Okay, good.
Yes, ma'am.
So, I would just like to add that your definition was saying that it was unwanted. What I want to, and it is unwanted, but I also want to add to that, just from my own personal experience of dealing with sexual abuse, sometimes a child doesn't really understand that it's unwanted until they've actually been counseled. But what they will end up doing is repeating the behavior to another child. It could be a family member, maybe not. But because since it is pleasurable, it is, and a lot of times it is just fondling and all of that, but it begins to become a wanted desire because they haven't really been educated that this is wrong. So, because with my experience with pushing a young girl, she was saying that she liked it, you know, and so I always encourage people to really pay attention to your child, especially if it's a young child, a toddler. Many times they will begin, after they've been potty trained, they may start urinating or just going to the bathroom on themselves just uncontrollably. And mm-hmm. I think that's because, you know, stimulation has been done to their genitals and they just don't really, their body don't really know what's going on. And so, you know, that's something to pay attention to. If you have a child, you know, that's a potty trained child, 3 years, 4 or 5 years old, and then they're starting to, you know, wet the bed or just, you know, pee on themselves or whatever the case. And if they are, you know, playing with dolls inappropriately, you know, just be mindful of what's going on. And if you do notice any of those behaviors, immediately go get help. Like, don't try to fix it yourself because you can't. whether you decide to go to the church or a sexual psychologist, or as long as it's a professional that knows how to deal with this. So even if you do decide to go to receive church counseling, just make sure that it's a professional in that area. Because it does happen. I think the reason why it's so rapid, because people do not talk about it. They don't share their experiences with it. They don't share how to deal with it, how to try to heal from it. And I think that if people begin to, you know, share stories and discuss it, even though it is sensitive and it is disheartening, if it's shared, then it will begin to become, it will reduce, especially within our community. I think a lot of us don't, the black community, we don't, you know, seek outside help many times. And a lot of times people mistake it for being curious, because I was just counseling a girl the other day, and we were talking about this, and she's grown, and she was telling me when she was younger that she and her sister was just being curious with each other. I'm, no, that's not curious, honey. That's not curiosity. When you're feeling on each other, you know, you're completely nude. No, that's way past curiosity. So I think parents should just more so keep the communication open with your children. And I stress on mine, you know, don't let nobody touch you down now. You better tell me. Or don't be kissing on, no, you let me know immediately.
Right.
So that's my comment.
Well, I know you'll be back with another comment. And I'm going to... or some more comments. I'm going to go off a couple of things that you said, just starting with the last thing, and then I'm going to go back to even the bedwetting and the list of signs. And also about us not wanting to tell. That is something that that I would like to stress as well, that we would like to stress along with, you know, what you said, like you tell your children, you know, no one should be touching you down there. We have to understand that we can start telling our children those things at a young age. We can start telling them at the age of 2, you know, no one should be touching you here, no one should be touching you there, you know, whatever names you decide to utilize for your children's, you know, personal areas. But there is a way that we can start telling them, even at the age, at that young age, that no one should be touching them. And I think maybe that sometimes what happens is sometimes we think our kids are too young to know, you know, for us to tell them certain things. But there is an age-appropriate way to say no one should be touching you there. Do you have anything to say, babe? Okay. Also... I wanted to also address just some of the signs to look for, which one of them, like you said, wedding. I'm just going to go through a list of warning signs here. There are a lot, and like I said, I'm going to give you guys some resources, but I'm just going to go over some of the things that I have here. Sexual behavior that is inappropriate for the child's age, and this is coming from the Rape, Abuse, and Incest National Network. Sexual behavior that is inappropriate for the child's age, bedwetting or soiling the bed if the child has already outgrown these behaviors, not wanting to be left alone with certain people or being afraid to be away from primary caregivers, especially if this is a new behavior, tries to avoid removing clothing to change or bathe, emotional signs. Excessive talk about or knowledge of sexual topics, resuming behaviors that they have outgrown, such as thumb sucking, nightmares or fear of being alone at night, excessive worry or fearfulness. So these are some of the signs. And children, adolescents, could be self-injury, running away from home, sexual, said it word, babe, I always miss promiscuity, depression, anxiety, suicide attempts, fear of intimacy or closeness, compulsive eating or dieting. So there are a lot of things for us to look for out there when we are, you know, looking at our children and paying attention to them to see if things are changing. Okay. They know I was trying to pronounce the word. Okay. We're gonna stop right there. We're gonna go ahead because we do have other callers on the line. So we're gonna start opening up the lines. If you have something to say, we ask that you, you know, go ahead and make your comment, or if you're just listening right now, then that's great too. And we will leave the lines open. Okay, we're gonna go to 1-844. Sorry, my husband's looking at me. He said I'm talking too much, y'all. Missionary Jade, are you there?
Yes, ma'am, Pastor. I'm here. How you doing, Pastor? Kenny, Pastor.
Good. Parker. How are you?
I'm good. I agree with everything that you're saying, but there's one thing. There's a lot of children that don't even exhibit signs of sexual abuse, you know, because I was one of those children. I was one of the ones that would just kind of just took it on, you know. So, and now that I have, you know, three daughters, I just, you know, I constantly watch them, you know, and make sure of things. So, you know, so how do you, I guess for the listeners, you know, I can just basically say for, you know, just always constantly watch your child. And I think that's where my mom kind of missed it, because she, you know, she was busy, you know, making a living, you know, providing for, you know, me and her, because it was just me and her. So she basically missed that factor. You know, and I just went on about my everyday life because it was just something I just concealed. And then one day I just finally told her, you know, and she didn't really know how to handle it.
You got something? Oh, no, okay. So you say that you were one of the kids that did not show any signs.
Yeah, I wasn't, you know, bedwetting, you know, bad behaviors or anything. You know, I was always into sports, so my mom, you know, I never stopped that because that was just my way. You know what I mean? I, you know, just was always out there. So, you know, did you find anything in your research for the parents that, you know, that for kids whose behaviors never change?
No, I
did.
Can I ask a question? Did you withdraw?
How old was she?
From, I want to say, like 7 until I was about 14.
I know from my research, with the bedwetting and all of that, typically it's in the younger children. I don't know why, but I just know that it's typically up until maybe around age, maybe up until like 5. You know, if the abuse started with them when they were maybe between 3 and 5 years old, then they may revert back to have an abstinence on themselves. That's why I asked about how old were you. And you didn't show any emotional signs at all?
Like, I was young, so I just kept doing what I was doing. You know, like, I didn't wet the bed. I didn't do any of that type of stuff. You know, all the things that y'all had listed. And I was like, well, maybe I was just different. But what another thing that I wanted to, ask or say is until I had daughters, and I was talking to my aunt about it one time once I had got older, like over 21, and she was saying it happened to her, like my mom and her sister. You know what I mean? So it was more like a generational thing. And then I made up in my mind that it's not going to happen to my daughters, because if it does, then, yeah, I'm just going to go to jail. So what would you say to people like that who realize that it is a generational thing that keeps happening to particular women in their family?
First of all, I'm sorry, my husband has something.
Good evening, Missionary Jade and Shannon. How y'all doing this evening?
Good.
Great.
All right. My thing, I would say definitely is, if, in fact, you know, some of these signs or symptoms show up, then first you need to make sure that you report it. right? And then in reporting, okay, then that then you have in the military, they have two ways you can report sexual assault. Okay, you have restricted, and then you have unrestricted reporting. Normally, what happens is pretty much like that in the civilian world as well, where you have a restricted reporting, which means that an investigation has to happen. They have to go in and do swabs, make sure that they're getting, you know, seminal samples, if that's the case, and penetration actually, you know, happened. Then an ongoing investigation goes on, and the person that is the assaulter is the one that actually will be incarcerated until he or she is either found guilty or they're innocent. And then for the person that's victimized, the victim, what happens is they have to go in and they have to get like a treatment, and they have to receive counseling and things of that nature. But then there's the unrestricted. Unrestricted is where, you know, there's no case being filed. You're just saying, hey, I believe I've been sexually assaulted. And then what happens is most of the time there's not even a case open. But nowadays, you know, since it's on the rise. It's more being reported more during this time and age. Then now what happens is, regardless of the fact, police, they don't really give the children the consent if it's a child. Children don't really have whether or not they're either going to report restricted or unrestricted. It just goes immediately restricted to where, you know, an ongoing investigation happens. You know, the personnel that are involved in it, you know, the assaulter and the victim, both have to be investigated, you know, and the whole nine. So definitely report if you see those signs and symptoms. But I want to make a comment on what you said, Missionary Jade, is you said that, you know, you make sure you keep an eye on your girls. And us being vigilant is really important, and us keeping that consistency and that continuity when it comes to an open line of communication with our kids really does go a long way. You know, I'm a hush right now because I'm gonna give my wife an opportunity to talk. I think I talk too much a little bit right now.
I'm gonna go back to you. Thank you, baby, for that information for enlightening us. I'm gonna go back to you, Mish. You said if it's a generational thing, how can you stop it? This is my opinion. First of all, when you say generational, I would first look at is, and to the other callers, I want you to know we are going to get to you, so please don't think we're ignoring you because we're not. If it's something that's going on in the family, I would first, identify whether or not this is happening by a family member. You know, if this is something that you are seeing that, okay, this was done by this family member, and then another family member, and then, you know, there's some way connecting to the first family member. You know, if it's something like that, then that right there is an issue that does need to be brought to light, and there is there's some exposure that's needing to be done there, some teaching, training,
right,
and some reporting. You know,
but
it
wasn't, family members. No, it was, you know, like more so boyfriends.
Okay, yeah. And it happened to her and to you.
Yeah, well, okay. No, he was a husband when my mom and them were younger, you know, to my grandmother. And, you know, boyfriend when it happened to me.
Okay. So you're saying just how can you stop the cycle of it? I would say, you know,
I feel like
stop.
I stopped the cycle. I did.
Yeah, I was just about to say, you know, look at it as, you know, you individually have, can you check on them, baby, please? You individually, you know, have your children, and so, you know, do what you are doing, staying involved with your children, you know, asking them, you know, keeping, like you said, keeping the line of communication open. And true enough, we have to just be real. You know, we can't be with our children all the time. And there are some things that we really although we desire not to happen, sometimes we just, you know, because we can't be everywhere. But, you know, just try to implement what we can and do the best, as, you know, the best that we can. Of course, you know, but before we send out children to someone's house, make sure we investigate. Does that always stop it? It doesn't. You know, honestly, it doesn't. However, you know, could that stop some things? It could. You know, doing our part as parents, and of course, you know, because this is a Christian-based show, you know, we are going to say, you know, pray over our children. You know, always pray over our children. Although we know we live in a world where things do happen, because we do live in this world. But I wanted to go back to your particular situation, even when you were saying there were no signs. But I also heard you say that your mom, she was working a lot because she, you know, she was a single mom and she had to provide for you all. So maybe you were already kind of emotionally, that there probably was not, even if you did withdraw more, it may not have even been noticed because your mom was out of the house. So you think that could have been part of it?
Probably so. As I sat here and thought about it a little bit more, I know I always wanted to stay the night, like come the weekend and things like that. There was two things. I always wanted to either go with my mom or just constantly just be out the house. Like I said, I was involved with a lot of sports. You know what I mean? A lot of sports. I wanted to hang over my friend's house. And so, you know, I don't know if she noticed that, you know, picked up, you know, but I believe that was just my, like, coping mechanism just not to be there.
Okay. So that in itself, yeah, that's a sign because it was a change. You know, and that's the thing I think we have to, you know, pay attention. Sometimes we look for big changes, and it could just be little small things that could occur, you know. And again, we have to be patient, you know, because we have to be patient with ourselves, because there's some things we might just miss because we're human, you know. We're parents. We're trying to do the best we can, and you know, we might miss some things, but if we pick up on those little small things, if we notice, you know, that's different, right, then maybe strike up a conversation, or you know, start asking some questions, or you know what I'm saying, because that could possibly be a sign, you know, that something is there. But Mish, we're going to leave your line open. I do want to come back to you, but we're going to go ahead and call on our other callers just to see if they have anything to say. Okay.
Okay.
Caller ending in 9966. You're on the air. Could you please give us your first name and if you have a comment or a question?
No, my name is Linda, and I'm just listening in tonight. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Welcome, Linda. Okay. Caller ending in 9562. Kyra, are you there?
I am here. How are y'all doing?
Good. How are you?
I'm good. Glad to be on here tonight listening to y'all. I'm enjoying the discussion tonight. It's personal. To me, you know, because some things I went through when I was a child that I didn't realize, I didn't know it was, you know, wrong, or I should say, I don't know. I just realized when I was a little older that wasn't okay. So I've definitely committed to talking to our children and, you know, things like that. And even one of our children have actually experienced something where a classmate had been touching one of our children, and we went through the school board. I mean, we went there, you know, we got that child removed from this class. But my concern was that child, my child, but why this child was doing this in kindergarten. And although we had talked to our child and, you know, counseled and everything, our issue was that this was a child in kindergarten who was doing this, who had touched my child, but had also touched other kids in the classroom. The school did not want to even deal with that part, nor did they want to deal with the little girl herself. You know what I'm saying? The mother was a great volunteer at the school, okay? So mom was on it, but her daughter was actually touching kids inappropriately in a major way. So one thing that, you know, I wanted to bring up was there was a case here that's still going on. It's still an open case. His name is Deontay Caraway here in Maryland. Some people may have heard about Deontay, but he was a volunteer at a school, teenager. I think he may have been, he was 22 years old. He has, right now, he's facing like 10 child pornography charges on school grounds. This young man was videotaping kids when he was taking them to the bathroom. He was a volunteer at a public school. This Deontay had, he knew a lot of kids in the neighborhood. So single mothers were allowing their kids to go with him when he wanted to take them to the playground. Deontay wanted to take him here, walking him to school. But the whole time he would take these kids to the bathroom at school and make them do things to each other, and he would record them. So now I think the principal and all this administration, they're fired or they're on leave or whatever you call it. But my thing is just putting it out there that as much as we watch our children, what happened to one of my kids, she was not in my fight, you know, she wasn't with me, but thank God she knew to come say something to me. And she did a week before it all, before she said anything, she was crying a lot. So she showed signs, and she's already kind of, you know, kind of cry about a lot of stuff, but she was crying a lot. She was doing a lot of crying, and she said she didn't want to go to school and she loved school. So that was, you know, something's wrong. You don't want to go to school. And another thing was she said she hated school. Now, we don't even use the word hate in the house, so we knew something was wrong. And that's when it came out that the little girl had touched my daughter. And so immediately we get in contact with the school. So my whole point of saying this is that even at home when we watch them and, you know, we talk to our kids just to keep doing it and don't ever think it gets too, you know, to keep, you know, saying it, because even in public school systems and, you know, when kids aren't in our sight, things are happening, and I never take it, just keep talking to them, you know, once every 2 months, every 3 months, whatever you have to do to keep reminding them. You know, because in my house, it actually helped my daughter, you know, to actually come to us. Kids are going through this. These were black kids that Deontay, this guy, had done this to, and their mothers were single. And so moms were working a lot. All of the mothers worked. And Deontay was like a, you know, big brother type thing. But he admitted, he said, "I'm sick." That's what he said. He said I knew I was wrong. He said, but I turn into a kid when I'm around other kids. See, there's a mental thing going on there. So you have people out here who are dealing with some things themselves, that keep praying over our kids and keep being vigilant. So that's my only comment with that there.
Well, thank you. And I want to piggyback off of some things you said as well, and we are going to leave your line open as well too, Kyra, so, you know, if anything else comes up, you know, you have to say, you know, you can jump in as well. Did you have anything to say, babe, before I keep on? Okay. Even what you were saying about the guy, that's something that I wanted to get into, because we know, you know, we have to watch our kids and we have to talk to our kids, but also we have to watch other people. I used to work in Texas. I used to work with juvenile sex offenders that were adjudicated to the Texas Youth Commission. And, you know, I worked on the sex offender treatment dorm. I was a caseworker, and so we would do group counseling and individual counseling with these kids, and in some cases, you know, we would do family counseling with the families. And what I did see a lot of is that a lot of these victimizers were victims themselves. a great number of them had been victims themselves. And so they, you know, they had been victimized for years, and then they grew up to be the perpetrators. And, you know, talking to them, you learn a lot. And one thing that we, you know, would talk about is how they would groom their victims, with what, which is what this guy did. And I want to give you all some information about grooming. Perpetrator does things, grooming is when a perpetrator does things in an effort to gain the trust of their intended victim, parents or guardians, community, and et cetera. So these perpetrators start off with a plan, and that's something that we have to know. A lot of times these are not impulsive type things, you know, actions. There's a plan in place, and sometimes they will carry out the plan. They will wait patiently to carry out the plan before victimizing, you know, and this is within the home or outside of the home. You know, I work with children whose parents were babysitting other kids, and you know they could, you know how you could just allow your children to play with somebody else's children that you're babysitting because you never think that your children, you know, their children are going to do anything. And these little boys would, you know, because I work only with boys, they would be perpetrating against these little children that were being babysat by their moms. No, that was just some of the cases. But, okay, there are steps in grooming. First, the perpetrator would target their victim. And we do see this. You know, there could be three kids in the house, and there are some cases where the perpetrator will choose one child, the one they may think is more vulnerable, the one they think they can, manipulate the most, the one that, you know, or in some cases, and I know this does not sound right, but this is the truth. It could even be the one that they feel that they're more attracted to. And so they, in some cases, will choose a victim. Then they begin to gain access and trust. Okay? Get trust, you know, gain access to the kids, get a trust and relationship with the parents, just like this young man did. You know, just whatever he did to gain their trust. Then they, you know, they develop a relationship and start playing a role with the kids. In his case, you know, big brother. I'm playing the big brother role. Then they isolate the children, you know, get them alone and do something to kind of isolate them, take them away. No, you don't want to play over there with them. Come on over here with me. Let's go and watch TV. Let's go in the room and play the video game. You know, so those type of things. So, again, you know, we have to be aware not only, you know, when it comes to our children, but, again, also to people that are around our children. Then they create secrecy. Well, I'm going to give you this note, but don't tell anybody. You know, don't tell anybody we went to get ice cream. You know, and I will do that sometimes, you know, out with your children. Girl, Mariah, don't tell your brother now, you know, we're going to get ice cream, but not that type of thing. You know, I'm saying where is, you know, create, don't tell your mom that I gave you this. Don't tell your dad that I gave you this. And then once they have set them all up, then they'll start initiating the sexual contact. Whether, you know, the kids I used to work with, which are no longer kids, but they were kids at the time. You know, it could be something as simple as, you know, rubbing his or her hair. You know what I'm saying? They start rubbing on the head, and then they'll move down to, you know, one of the private places, just rubbing. And then the next time, they may rub a little more, or you know what I'm saying? And then it escalates, and they move on. And then the seventh stage is control. They begin to control the relationship, and that's something that we have to keep in mind also. You know, when we're talking about sexual assault, sexual abuse. It is about power and control. And that's what they do. They control, they'll control the relationship. Even a back to, you know, if you tell this, if you tell them that I did this, then I'm going to do this. Or I won't do this. You know, so these type things. And so we, again, you know, we have to keep in mind that, like you said, there are people out there, Kyra, like you said, there are people out there with things going on in their heads. And so we have to be aware. Here you go, baby.
All right. So one thing that's going on today, callers that are on the air tonight, is there is also happening in the homes now, right? And what's happening is, you know, boyfriend, he was molested when he was a young boy. He's grown up to be a man, and now he has a girlfriend. Girlfriend is vulnerable. She's been her own. He sees that, and he monopolizes on the moment. So now boyfriend gets to meet the kids and discovers that single mom has a little girl or a couple of little girls. So now he's moving into the point where he's grooming mom, trying to get mom to be okay. Okay, it's all right. You got to work late. I'll keep the kids. And mom is falling in love. And then mom falling in love in her vulnerability because she's seeing that this guy is so nice. This is a part of the grooming stage. She sees he's so nice. She sees that he's caring. He cooks. You know, he'll babysit the kids if I need to work late. Girl, he's a good man. He's a good man. But now daughters are changing because now this guy is now going into grooming the daughters and molesting the daughters, and the daughters are afraid to say something, or the boys are afraid to say something, right, because they don't want mom to be mad at them.
Yeah.
That's why it's important for us to continue to keep that continuity with communication with our kids, okay, because sometimes your kids – the reason they won't tell is because of fear of getting in trouble. And now, you know, mom is like, you're just trying to ruin a good thing. You know, he's a good man. He wouldn't do nothing like that to y'all. And daughter or son has come out and told mom, but mom won't believe him. So now the child is pulled away from the relationship as a whole, as far as the mom, daughter, son, daughter, mom aspect. And then we have to figure out how can this work if, you know, mom is not believing the child. Children need a voice. They need to be heard. But again, parents, you know, it really does go back to us, you know, really, really keening in and zoning in on our children's behavior. Because as a victim advocate, you know, for the military, right, there are always signs. There are always signs. And those signs come anywhere from, you know, outbursts of anger. You know, a child that was once mean is now happy. Okay, and a child that was once happy is now mean. And what I mean by that is if you have a child that's, you know, normally to themselves and they're mean as far as, like, they don't like to deal with people or they have short patience with people, just because of the personality, you know, because, I mean, you know, there are kids that have personalities like that. But now all of a sudden they're happy and joyful. That's because it could be simply a sign of them being groomed, or they're falling in love, or they're having an infatuation with this person. And then vice versa, you know, you can have that child that's easygoing, outgoing, that victim, that predator sees as vulnerable, and now he or she stepped in and molested or sexually abused your child, right? And now your child is different. Introverted, don't want to be bothered, very short patience, and so there's always outbursts, right? And I have experienced, you know, this even in the military with adults, and I'm here to tell you it. There's always a sign.
And we're gonna open up for you guys. I just want to say one thing that goes back to you know, like what Shannon was saying earlier when you said, you know, the child could be, you know, falling in love. And what Shannon was saying earlier is, you know, in some cases, the child may like, you know, like the feeling. And so that's something else, too, to look out for. You know, if you do have, you know, a boyfriend or somebody in the home or whatever, and you see that your child is beginning to have this unusual type of attachment, you know, because of what has gone on, and they may, you know, really do think that this is normal, because like Shannon was saying earlier, until you're taught that it's not normal, you think that it's normal. And then, you know, some of and their physical bodies, you know, even though they could even be having a struggle emotionally, they could be, but physically, you know once they could enjoy it physically without trying to, just because of the reaction that comes about physically, you know, from penetration and things like that. Okay, do any of you all have anything to say?
Yes, nobody? I do. This is Shannon. I would say, you know, what I dealt with in my home, first of all, my biggest fear since I was, you know, felt on from my cousins or whatever growing up, and it really wasn't like an ongoing thing, but it happened, like maybe like one time, but my biggest fear was always to try to prevent anything from happening to my children. But it did. It still came through. And now I am really a big advocate of praying, because it's a demonic spirit. Mm-hmm. That's just the way I see it. It's a demonic spirit, and it will continue to linger, and it will continue to, you know, slither through. Whether it's your family, somebody you're close with, so we have to, you know, make sure that we pray over that, because once a child has been introduced prematurely, it does affect them, whether it's subconsciously or what, it will affect them. So we have to make sure that, you know, we pray and rebuke that spirit and pray that it's free, it's gone, like, completely. You know, because even though I never wanted anything to happen to my children, it still came into my home. And I'm a single parent of four, and so, but I made sure my schedule, you know, allowed me to still make sure that my kids stay active. My children are very active. They've always been active. I had one boyfriend that lived with me throughout this. My oldest child is 18. So it wasn't like I had a revolving door, because I was like, okay, you know, dudes can come through for a minute. They could be crazy, you know. So I'm like, no, I don't want nobody around my children. Yet it still happened. So we have to make sure that, one, we pray that spirit up out and off, like, for real. It helps if you are, you know, in a situation where your child has been exposed to this foolishness. They have to get help. They have to. And I think that's the reason why it's so rampant. The thing is, like what Kenny was saying, it seems like now it's happening more in the home. No, it's been happening in the home. People just don't say nothing. They don't say nothing. You know,
right.
Or the mom or the wife or what, the girlfriend, my girlfriend, he wouldn't do that, you know. Or like for a situation, a girl that I knew, it was her aunt's boyfriend that messed with her. And her auntie put her out of her house. She was like, oh, no, my boyfriend wouldn't do no mess like that. So first of all, you know, as parents, as adults, if somebody come at you, a child come at you saying, okay, this happened, you need to, it's your responsibility to investigate whether it's true or false. You have to find out if it was true or not.
Mm-hmm.
And pray. That's my biggest thing. Pray. And talk about it. Like, talk about it for real. And don't be playing with this junk, because that's the only way it's going to stop, is if we talk about it.
That's right.
And share. You know, that's all I have to say.
I agree with that. But I also believe, too, like a lot of parents, aunts, or whatever, that are put in this situation, I believe sometimes they're scared. because yeah. they have bills. Yeah. And, you know, this person is providing a good percentage of the financial help that's coming into the house. So that's why they take that approach of they wouldn't do that, or, you know, you're lying, you know, start putting people on their house and things like that. I think it has a lot to do with that also.
Yeah.
I think also may have something to do with guilt. Now, me, I don't care how much money you're putting in the house. If you're doing it, you got to.
Yeah.
That's just me.
Yes, ma'am. That's me too.
You know, you have to go. But I think it also could be guilt. You know, I think it could be a lot of things because just imagine if you are a mother and you are in a relationship with this guy that you, and then you bring him in and then he victimizes your one of your children. You know, I think that, you know, could also just make you feel like you are some type of, you know, failure or whatever. Right. We don't want to believe it, so we're in denial because we begin to look more at us. Well, no, how could I? There's no way I would let this happen. I'm a better judge of, you know, and by looking at us, you know, we're not looking at our child or we're not looking at the situation or we're not looking at the possibility. And so I believe that that's sometimes what happens. And also, you know, I wanted to put something else out there. This happens, you know, I know we were using boyfriends, but husbands, you know, and it's not only against, you know, moms, you know, it's not just father, boyfriend, you know, against daughter, stepdaughter.
Right.
It's mothers against daughters. It's mothers against sons. It's, you know what I'm saying, sister against brother, brother against sister, aunt against, you know, it's such a wide range. Like there is, you know, there is no way of, you know, we just have to keep. We can't say, well, just because she's a woman, she wouldn't do it to our son. You know what I'm saying? That's what I'm trying to say, because it happens, you know, in so many different ways. It just happens in so many, you know, different ways, And it's sad, and I do agree that we have not been talking about it. This is stuff that was happening, like you said, Shannon, years ago. I'm talking about years, you know, when our great-grandparents were around, you know, and it is something in the Black community that we've been taught to be quiet. You know, you keep it within the house. Keep it within the house. You know, what my mama didn't teach, I'm not saying my mom taught us that, but I'm just saying that is something that you do hear in the Black community a lot. You know, what happens in the family stays in the family. You don't need to talk about it, though, you know, that type deal. And it goes on and on and on. And so we do need to talk about these things. We do need to get help. And I'm about to let my husband say something, but I want to say one thing. Going back to if you do talk to someone, like Kenny said, you know, even if you go to your pastor, whatever, we have a responsibility according to the law. We are required to report these things. So if you go to a pastor, you go to a counselor, you go to a teacher, you know, there are people that are, according to the law, we are required to report cases of, you know, allegations of sexual abuse. Well, abuse, but right now we're talking about sexual abuse. We are required to report those things. So if you go talk to your, you know, if you go to a minister or somebody or a counselor and they don't report it, then they haven't done what they're supposed to do. We are supposed to report those things, those allegations.
Absolutely. And then reporting, right, it you're doing it, you're doing it to make sure that predator, that sexual predator, is brought to justice, and that your child gets the help that he or she so rightfully deserves, because their innocence is being stripped away from them by this pervert that decides to do something like that. And you know, there are even cases where, you know, mom or dad will just say, just act like it didn't happen. And they don't get the child the help he or she may need. And now this child resents and hates mom or dad because they didn't do anything to help me. You wasn't there. You didn't do anything for me when I was going through this. And then now that's another problem that has to go on. Now this vicious cycle can be stopped. And even if you have a friend in the neighborhood whose child comes over and plays with your child, and they just so happen to tell your son or daughter or something that happened to them, it's your job to report it. Regardless of whether that person likes you or not after that, it's your job to report it, because you can be held liable for not reporting it if some information like that was to get into your ear and you didn't say anything about it. So instead of being an inactive bystander, let's be an active bystander, because with that, this stuff, it's been going on for years, like we said. It might not be something that's going to stop completely, but it definitely could be something that can be changed for the better. And, I definitely admire everyone for calling in on tonight and giving, their words of wisdom, because it definitely helps. This is basically, the iron sharpens iron concept. When you know better, you do better, and we're bringing out resources and points that should come out and stories that should come out, so that someone who's gone through or has been a victim of it knows exactly what to do. So thank you all very much.
And I wanted to just give some resources that I found online, and I know there are a lot more out there, and I'll be posting these on the website. On our Facebook page, sorry. American Psychological Association. Then there's the National Center for Victims of Crime, the National Child Traumatic Stress Network, and Rape, Abuse, and Incest National Network. And, again, I'll be putting those on our Facebook page. And April is National Sexual Awareness, Sexual Assault Awareness Month. So, there should be some other resources and things coming out, at that time, and want to make sure, that we do continue to talk, continue to speak about this, continue to, bring things to the forefront. And if you are listening and you are an adult that in any way was victimized, because sometimes, it is a case where you were victimized as a child, but you don't even realize you were victimized, going back to what you were saying, Kyra, because you may think, oh, they just touched me and that wasn't, so I wasn't. But no, that is sexual assault. Yeah. That is sexual abuse. So you have, been victimized. And just as Shannon said, there is going to affect you some type of way. Even if you don't know it, there is still an effect there. And so, we again stress the point that's already been made tonight over the line: get help, talk to somebody, get counseling, spiritual counseling, professional counseling, a spiritual professional counselor, because we do have those. We have people that are saved, and that is their area of expertise. They've gone to school for it, they're licensed in it, So get help. Talk to somebody. Again, we thank you all for listening on tonight. We love you guys. Thank you. Please share this broadcast with somebody. And we will be back here on Tuesday at 8 p.m. Eastern. You all have a good night.
Good night.
Good night.
Good night.